all of these models are stupid. I hate them. And you know what? If we don't stop the implementation of the fiat regulation into Bitcoin, Bitcoin could become the CBDC. Is that not a CBDC? So we are in the then they fight you stage, and it's gonna accelerate. Bitcoin is a threat to, there's a lot of talk about like a potential Bitcoin strategic reserve, and people get really excited about that. My biggest fear is really,
Bing bong, I am back with another State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the legend Michelle Weekly in the house, Director of Product Services at Byte Federal. But Michelle, before we get all this started, we've recently just nibbled on that all-time high here, and we're seeing a lot of traditional finance dumping a bunch of cash into these ETF products. But I would have thought we would have blown off the top by now with everything doing all this. So I know you like to go into a lot of the deep conspiracy theories. So do you think BlackRock is suppressing the price of Bitcoin now so they can scoop up more?
Probably, right? But honestly, I don't think that they're intentionally suppressing the price of Bitcoin. I think the ETFs introduce a very large new factor in this like 4-year cycle of price. I've always been a 4-year cycle person. I think, you know, the halving and that dictates the way that the price develops. And so obviously with the introduction of the ETFs, there's this massive buy side that we've never had before. And I think in general, that does sort of suppress price, but it's not going to be forever. You know, there's a lot of caution with the election coming up. And I think depending on the outcome of that, we could see, we're sort of tracking for a new all-time high. Generally, we see like 12 to 18 months after the halving, we get a price run. And so I'm expecting that to happen, especially if Trump wins the election. I think we'll get a massive green candle.
Oh, there we go. I like the wordplay on that. And we'll go into the election because I know you've been tweeting a lot about that here lately. But I want to talk about the 4-year cycles here because I think that's an interesting point, because I'll play devil's advocate with you. I think the halving matters less as we're going deeper into this because we have less than 10% of the coins already being mined. So I think it's the crazy Bitcoin psychopaths that are just hodling onto their coins for dear life opposed to the halving cycle. So right. Tell me, why do you still believe in this 4-year cycle?
Sure. So, I mean, you know, the hodling doesn't, I would agree that the hodling has an effect, which is sort of a whole separate conversation, right? Like store of value versus mode of transaction. But I don't entirely disagree with you that it has less of an effect, although I still think it's an effective model. I think, you know, if you look back historically, you see a massive run and then like an 80% drawdown. But that's actually a generalization. If you do the actual math, it's really like there was an 84% drawdown and then an 82% drawdown and then a 79% drawdown. So we do see the effects of it dampening. And I think that that will continue to happen throughout each epoch. But I don't think that it's nothing. I think it's not even necessarily a precise match that we have the halving, you know, you see the supply cut and there's like this exact reason. I don't know. Honestly, I zoom out, I see the Fibonacci spiral and I think that's that. Like, I don't need to know anything else. It's what makes the most sense to me. It's what has been true since I've been involved in Bitcoin. And while I do agree that little by little, each epoch, the effect will be less, I think it is still the primary model that is, you know, the most effective.
Okay. Well, you said the word model here. So last cycle we had the stock to flow model. This cycle, it seems like we have the power law, and everybody is always trying to predict the price. So how much weight do you carry into these, you know, I guess, quote unquote models? I know that the 4-year cycle isn't necessarily a model or anything like that, but do you carry any weight into this when you're kind of looking at buying, maybe trying to time the market, or how do you look at like the price to the supply ratio and everything like that?
Absolutely not. All of these models are stupid. I hate them. And you know what? I probably should use my words more precisely, because I don't even think that the four-year cycle is a model. It's an explanation of the cyclical nature of Bitcoin, and it's a way to analyze the patterns of price movement, but that's not the same as a model. And I know that that's really technical and people don't like nuance, but it's not actually a model. I don't even know what this stock to flow nonsense is. It's that's what it is to me. Or no, stock to flow was the previous nonsense. I actually think that was a little more accurate in retrospect than the new one. What's the new one called?
The power law.
Yeah. Look, I don't subscribe to any of this nonsense. And I think anyone getting involved should also not subscribe to any of this stuff. You're not going to beat the Wall Street guys. I mean, as much as some of us dislike the Wall Street bros, we love you, but you're not going to trade against people that are professional traders that are, you know, have market makers in their back pocket and all of this. You know, to me, the only caution that so to me, the answer is DCA. If you have a large sum, break it up into chunks and DCA that in. If you want to do sort of like a blended DCA versus lump sum purchase. The only caution that I have is that every 4 years, we generally get this price run. And that's not the best time to buy, right? It's generally when people do buy is when they're FOMOing in. But if we start seeing like a new all-time high and then we're at $80,000, $85,000, $90,000 Bitcoin, that's the only time where I might tell someone, just pause, like pause on if you're entering for the first time and you're wanting to purchase, like just wait, because we know there's going to be a drawdown. But that would be like friends and really close family, because I do not give advice. People, you know, people don't listen, and people will get mad no matter what you tell them to do. So
100%. And then if they see that drawdown, all of a sudden you're the one that caused that, right? And then Instead of just focusing on the long-term vision of everything. But, you know, we've seen a lot of interesting things this cycle already starting, right? We've seen, you know, Trump, RFK coming into the Bitcoin conference, you know, not only El Salvador continuing to stack, Argentina. Does it worry you a little bit, these governments getting into Bitcoin, or how are you viewing all this? I mean, I know you like the tinfoil hat kind of stuff here, Michelle. So are you worried about the governments trying to find a way to control it, or, you know, delete off ramps? Like, what is the biggest thing that worries you about governments getting into the Bitcoin space?
I love this question. So that was actually two questions, right? Am I worried about the government involved? And then what is my biggest concern? Because, okay.
Let's buckle. So,
yeah. Now I know how Sailor feels. I'm absolutely worried about government involvement, right? So everybody, it's a double-edged sword. I think having RFK and Trump and, you know, we had, I think there were 8 different like senators in Nashville, in addition to the big headline names. It's great. It's great for adoption. It was sort of inevitable if you wanted Bitcoin to succeed and to continue to grow. And we knew that one day we would get Wall Street involved. And so we're in this post-Wall Street era. And so now we have to kind of play these big boy games. And no, I don't like it. Like, I hate it. Like, take me back. You know, let's go back to like the early days. Those were sort of the golden days, especially if you're in Bitcoin for like libertarian values and, you know, screw the government and all this stuff. But, I don't want to discount like the, if we have to play these games, obviously having people come, a lot of people are like, oh, Trump's just like pandering. And it's like, yeah, he is pandering. That's what they do, right? They pander. So there was a lot of excitement about, there's a lot of talk about like a potential Bitcoin strategic reserve, and people get really excited about that. I certainly have cautions about that, because if you take a step back and say, all right, Bitcoin is important enough that the federal government wants to hold it in its strategic reserves. Well, certainly you could extend that and say it's important enough that we have to make all of these new rules and regulations surrounding how you can interact with it. If you can own it yourself, if you can hold it, if you can, what does that look like? And that sort of parlays into like my biggest fears. And I would say that my biggest fear is really, just having all of the fiat controls rebuilt into the Bitcoin system without, and I think that that is happening without a lot of attention. So, you know, people on Twitter like to say like, oh, Bitcoin doesn't care. And ultimately, the Bitcoin protocol does not care, right? I mean, the US could make Bitcoin completely illegal and Bitcoin would be fine, right? Like, I mean, we saw a China ban a couple years ago. This is inevitable. We're going to have hostile nations. But I am an American citizen. A lot of my family and friends live in the United States. And for as long as we are American citizens, we are subject to the rules and regulations. Like, you know, I don't want to be illegally holding my Bitcoin. And by the way, you can leave the United States, but like, let's talk to Roger Ver about how that played out. You know, the United States does not play around when you're doing things that they don't like. And so we have a lot of things. We have KYC that was introduced, you know, we started seeing regulation around like 2017, 2018, and that's when a lot of the on-ramps started KYCing. And a lot of people just blindly KYC. I was one of them. I was really agnostic to KYC prior to getting the job that I have. And then I started my job and I did my government-sponsored AML KYC training. And I thought like, holy shit. You know, so, okay, Bitcoin doesn't care. The Bitcoin protocol doesn't care, but we use products and services to access our Bitcoin, right? Like, it would be amazing if everyone was running their own node and, like, you know, downloading a wallet from an internet website, compiling it themselves, opening their own Lightning channels on their own node. I mean, okay, great. Yes, you can run Bitcoin in a fully self-sovereign way. You can have a bunch of VPNs and do all of these things. But ultimately, most people are not going to do that. Even the people that are technically able to do it, you know, they don't have the desire to do it. There's always just going to be that's always going to be a very small number of people that are doing that. So how does everyone else access their Bitcoin, right? Well, we used to love this app called Wallet of Satoshi so we could like show our friends. You know, I can't tell you how many people, like restaurant bartenders, you know, download Wallet of Satoshi. I'm going to tip you in Bitcoin. And you could make that happen in under 2 minutes. It's gone, right? And why is that? Because of the looming regulation from the government. So we have KYC that came in. We have KYB, which is Know Your Business, that's being built into a lot of the services that you see being announced in other places. There's something called KYT, which is when the entity processing your Bitcoin transaction is required to run chain analysis on that transaction. And, you know, all of this is kind of like creeping in, and that's really concerning to me. So that is like by a very wide margin, my largest concern.
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power the show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right. Back to the show. Yeah, the KYC and all that, it does seem very scary then. So then, yeah, knowing the transactions and everything, like how would that make that any different than the current fiat rails? I mean, obviously, you know, you lined it out, right? We technically could do all these different ways in order to be, you know, self-sovereign, basically just not include KYC, but 99% of people are not going to do that. I would maybe even argue 99.9% of people wouldn't even do right. that. So, you know, what would the benefit of them knowing all our transactions be necessarily?
The benefit for the government?
Yeah, outside of just taxes. Or is that the only
I mean, way? Ask the Canadian truckers, right? So the Canadian truckers were protesting, and Canada didn't like the protests. And so I think they had a GoFundMe that got shut down, and they had to use Bitcoin, right? But the Bitcoin, in some cases, the Bitcoin that was sent to them was easily accessible and they were free to use it. But there were some cases where that Bitcoin got locked up. And the only way that that they were able to lock the Bitcoin up was because they knew, you know, who was sending it to who and via what method, or like what on and off ramp, right? So if they control the on and the off ramps and all your sats are KYC'd, they can do whatever they want, right? Right. They can lock this transaction. They can lock that. So, you know, I mean, I assume you asking like, why does the government care is a little bit hypothetical because they, you know, unfortunately care about everything that we're doing. And this is why I have become so outspoken about politics is because like, I don't want to be involved in all of this nonsense, but this nonsense is involved in what we're doing. And so if we don't participate in some way in shaping the way that it develops, I don't think we're going to be very happy with the result. So, you know, there's still all of this FUD about Bitcoin being like the currency of choice for criminals. And what a lot of people don't realize is that that's not just some like nefarious, like silly little thing that Senator Warren made up to like get her way. That is by and large the way that they crack down on things that they don't want, like they being the government. If you look at the charges against, you know, almost anyone involved in the industry, like CZ, for example, and I know Bitcoiners get mad, like they get upset about, you know, well, CZ was scamming people and stuff because he is not a Bitcoin only purist. But you have to look at the charges that they actually like put CZ in jail for, and they put him in jail for money laundering and for violating something called the IEEPA, which is this permanent emergency order, right, that was put in place so that the government could control what people are doing with their funds. And all of that is under the guise of protecting people from criminal activity, right? So they, you know, they're very concerned about what we're doing, unfortunately. And so it's something people need to be aware of and we need to, fight against.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear you on that. And I mean, it definitely is something that is scary. So with that going forward, I mean, obviously, you know, I've seen your Twitter, you're big for hoping that Trump is going to win this next election. I am too. And I think a lot of people in the Bitcoin space as well. And he's actually come out and said that there would be potential to get rid of capital gains tax, where you can transact Bitcoin for a cup of coffee or something along those lines. Do you think that's all just, you know, pandering to, or do you think there's actually some weight behind that where we could see a world in the next 4 years where Bitcoin is, you know, getting rid of capital gains and able to be used as a medium of exchange?
Yeah. Well, look. I'm really excited that we're having this conversation, right? I mean, we don't know, right? And yes, I'm hoping that Trump wins. I'm a big Trump fan. I love the guy. I will genuinely root for anybody that's like speaking up, even if I don't agree with, there's lots of things I disagree with Trump about, but the man runs his mouth. And obviously, you know, I identify with that. So I'm just excited that we're having this conversation. Do I think it'll happen in 4 years? You know, who knows? I mean, there's, you know, flip a coin. But he has brought it up. We're discussing it. And nothing's going to happen if we don't start talking about it first, right? So whether he's just pandering or not, quite frankly, I don't really care. Because that's what they do. They pander and they gather interest. And they see, oh, there's a lot of interest in this, right? Like people are really excited about this. There might be something to this. And then they learn more. And then eventually something might happen, right? So whether Trump does it or not, I mean, it would be, I think, it would send us to the moon in terms of adoption, because this is really the thing that's holding American citizens back from being able to use their Bitcoin. I think, you know, there's a couple of factors, but by and large, that is one of the biggest factors. And it would be so incredible if he did it. And I think there's certainly a possibility. You know, he's learning. He's in his shitcoin phase. But most of us went through this, right? And eventually, I presume that he will become a Bitcoiner. And he will understand how important it is to repeal that ridiculous, you know, tax. And if he doesn't, like, at least we talked about it, right? At least we can continue that conversation and we can bring it up to local representatives and maybe start like more of a ground movement, pushing it upwards. That's, I think, how you really get things done. So I think, honestly, it's a win-win either way. Like, it would be incredible if he does it. And if even if he doesn't, at least the conversation has been started.
Yeah, 100%. And I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think some people were expecting a little bit more out of his Nashville talk. But to be honest, like, I was just happy that Trump was there. I mean, I felt like it was another campaign kind of rally speech. Right. And, you know, I mean, it shows the importance of the movement and everything like that, at the very least. But we've danced around the election this whole time. So let's get in. I want to see your craziest tinfoil hat theory here about this election, because last year, you know, I mean, the Dems already came out and asked Trump and J.D. Vance if they thought Trump won the 2020 election with all the mail-in ballots hubbub. Calling all shadowy supercoders, I've got an event specifically for you. That's right. I am working with PlebLab to help out with Top Builder. Top Builder, it's like the Top Chef, but for shadowy supercoders. They've got a Bitcoin prize worth of $15,000 that you can earn when you showing off your skills. But not only that, you will gain valuable exposure, mentorship, and great collaboration opportunities. And a lot of people raised money last year, not just the winner. So you have the potential to show your stuff. All you got to do is sign up now. Between now and December 31st, go through 3 rounds where you are showing your skills, and then at the end, you will showcase your stuff at Startup Day down in Austin. So go ahead and sign up now and get everything started for Top Builder and showcase your stuff and help build in the Bitcoin ecosystem. All right, enough for me. Back to the show. Now, there seems to always be some nefarious things that go around here in the U.S. So, I mean, one, do you trust this election here coming forward? And two, if you don't, then what is the Dems' way into weaseling the election out of here this time?
Yeah. Well, look, man, I don't know, right? There's no, I mean, my opinion on this changes like every couple of hours. I'm like, okay, I think this is what's going to happen. And I'm scrolling Twitter and I'm like, nah, I have it all wrong. I think a lot of nonsense happened in 2020. And I think in retrospect that there's always been a lot of nonsense happening. It's just that we, with more and more social media and alternative, you know, platforms, we're able to get more attention on it. And so ultimately, okay, so if you don't think, I get asked a lot, like, well, if you don't think that 2020 was a fair election, then like, what's the point now? Well, you know, there's a couple answers to that. Like, first and foremost, there is, I do believe there is still a tipping point where if enough people vote, right, like they can only pull some sort of nonsense within a certain margin. And if enough people vote, if Trump wins in a decisive landslide, there's nothing that they can do about it, right? I came out of 2020 like really blackpilled, and I remember like some of the, I have a couple of beloved like boomers in my life, and they were like, well, you know, it's okay. Like, yeah, we think some weird things happen. It's okay. We'll vote again in 2020. And I was so angry. I was like, you guys are crazy. Like, they're going to do it again, and they're going to be emboldened because they've gotten away from, you know, and that was really my attitude. And I don't even disagree with that stance. I think they are more emboldened. And they are going to try the same things. But another thing that I learned was like how few people actually vote, right? And so we're letting like these crazy lunatics go out and pick these candidates that are insane, that don't represent us in any way. Like, certainly Trump's not perfect, but like, I would say, you know, there are a lot of things where I would prefer him to be in charge over whatever the heck is happening now. And I think most people's lives were better than Trump. So I think that they're going to do more nonsense. Yes. But I still think it's worth trying to like take back the country. Right. And we do have a way to do that. And that's if everybody goes out and vote. And I'm sure if Trump loses, especially if it's a close call, I'm going to get a lot of shit for this. But like, the more that I looked at it and the more that I've learned about it, you know, like, I didn't want to be involved in politics. If you had told me I would be advocating for politics, I would have literally laughed in your face. I still have this "don't tread on me" sign in my office. Like, I was part of the Tea Party in Washington, D.C. Like, just leave me alone. But what I've learned as I've like grown up, I left the United States, I came back and I was like, what the fuck is happening here? You know? And I've learned that, like I said, like, people don't want to be involved. Like, the normal, smart people with common sense don't want to be involved. They just want to be left alone. But we're not being left alone, right? Like, it wasn't Trump. Trump did all of this shit with COVID. I don't agree with any of it, but he didn't do the mandates. It was the current administration that came in and did the mandates and tried to tell us we had to get the jab. You know, the current administration has really involved itself in our lives. I got my role, you know, with Byte Federal, and realized how much they were involving themselves in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And I was just like, we have to participate in this. Like, if we just continue to do nothing, this path that's unfolding is not creating a future that we want to be a part of. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great. And to be honest, I was kind of the same way, where I didn't want to vote for any political candidate. I mean, I think the first election I voted in was the 2021, because I just...
Me too, by the way.
Yeah, it was just because it was the same thing. Like, I just didn't want to be involved with it. I thought it was nonsense. And then I kind of saw the writing on the wall with 2020, and I was like, okay, you know, we can't really... you know, go through all this stuff again. And, you know, and you realize too, as time goes on, that, you know, the Fed and everything else is supposed to be bipartisan. It's not supposed to be any sort of political swaying, but, you know, they get put into office by these political candidates, so they're going to do majority of what they say. And so that's why I think we've seen a shift, is where politics is affecting the economy well more than maybe, you know, 12, 16 years ago, I think, at least in my opinion, with the presidential election and everything like that. So with all that being said, you know, what do you think of the job that the Fed is doing with all of this, whether they're, you know, I guess just kind of bending the knee to politicians to raise interest rates, to lower them? Like, what do you think of that kind of, I guess, involvement here?
Yeah, it's obviously, it's terrible, and it's getting exponentially worse. I think the writing is on the wall that we're on a sinking ship. You know, the debt, we're printing money to serve as debt because we can't handle the debt, right? Our credit cards are maxed out and we can't even afford the interest payments. So I think we're really at the looting stage, where the politicians are like looting everything that they can to just survive. And unfortunately, everything has gotten more and more political. I completely agree with you that things have become more politicized. And so who's sort of at the top does matter more. And we're seeing it like trickle down. You know, I don't know what to say about the Fed except end the Fed. I mean, what's happening is completely unsustainable. And if you look at other countries that lost control of their currencies, if you look at what happened in Venezuela, Lebanon, Nigeria, we see really similar tracking. And I'm really genuinely fearful of that happening here. I think it's not necessarily a matter of if, but probably when.
Of us reaching to a point of hyperinflation?
Yes, I believe the dollar will hyperinflate. I don't know if it will happen in our lifetimes or not. But I think that there's a very significant chance that it does. And what's really concerning to me is the number of people who just don't care. Like, oh, no way. It could never happen here thing. I went through this in 2020. I was watching the lockdowns in China and people were like, oh, that could never happen here. And it's like, yes, it absolutely can.
Yeah, and I felt the same way about the bank accounts being frozen until I saw the Canadian right. truckers, and that was like, you know, right up the road from us. So, you know, I want to dive into this, you know, how you think that we could potentially get into a hyper Bitcoinized world, if you think we could even get there at all, because, you know, the way I see it is I see two paths. I see one where maybe we use Bitcoin as a strategic reserve, or, you know, we kind of limit the amount of government spending for a little bit. But ultimately, you know, the government and the Fed is run by humans, so it's going to hyperinflate at some point in time. But it's going to be delayed here because of some good policies they put into place here in the short term. But long term, humans are going to fuck it up anyway. But it gives Bitcoiners a little bit more time. The other is the accelerationist theory where, you know, maybe Kamala gets into president, we print more money, everything happens a lot quicker, everything crashes and burns, but then it takes, you know, a decade or two to build things back up on a Bitcoin standard. Now, how do you see us getting to a full-fledged Bitcoin standard? Do you see either one of those two paths or something that I didn't even mention here?
Yeah. Well, it depends how you define a Bitcoin standard, right? So are we talking the governments using, like, basically the replacement of the dollar with Bitcoin? And so it's being held as a strategic reserve. It's being used as, like, a final settlement layer. And we just sort of all have a little bit of Bitcoin in cold storage. And it's our, like, our lifetime savings. Or, you know, I kind of think of hyper-Bitcoinization as, like, people using their Bitcoin, not just saving in Bitcoin, but, like, using it day-to-day, buying, you know, coffee, buying a house. Yes, it's our savings account, but having it be a lot more than that. And, you know, I think that future is at risk. I see a future. I think one day you will turn on the TV and it will price oil in Bitcoin sats. You know, the petrodollar has died, and I think petro-BTC will happen in our lifetime. So that is one definition of, you know, we have won. But for me, true hyper-Bitcoinization is we're, like, using Bitcoin. And I think that's probably a long ways off. We'll see.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. Why do you think it's a long ways off? What do you think's, like, holding things back? Is it the taxes or is it the technology? What do you think's holding it back?
It's primarily when I would say it's really taxes and regulation. And, you know, I think there's great tools and there's a lot of really intelligent people in Bitcoin. So the second that we can build more tools without the restraints that are currently in place, I think you're going to see the tools grow exponentially. But it's really a matter of, like, regulation. I don't know if you saw, so there are two reports that just came out by the European Federal Bank, the FE, I forget the alphabet. Do you know the report I'm referring to?
I'm trying to see, have you tweeted about it here recently?
I don't know that I did because I was actually traveling. So I have a bunch of bookmarks, like, saved, but I just had a conversation yesterday with somebody about it. But basically, like, one of the largest central banks in Europe and then I think in the US, both published papers talking about, like, what a danger Bitcoin is. So we are in the then they fight you stage, and it's going to accelerate. especially if we see a Kamala Harris presidency. The crackdown on Bitcoin, I think, is going to be unprecedented. They literally say in this report, I'll send it to you when we're done, but they literally say in the report all the things that we know and are really excited about, like that Bitcoin is a threat to the central banks. Bitcoin is a threat for their ability to run indefinite deficits. And so they're starting to see the writing on the wall where Bitcoin shuts down their ability to print infinitely. And they are going to fight this with everything they have. You know, it's just getting started. And unfortunately, I have a little like peek into it because we're a fully licensed money services business. And it's going to get wild before it gets better, you know. And a lot of people like to say, like, oh, like people discount all of these rules and regulations. Oh, screw them. Like, don't follow them, you know, like, okay, well, how did that work out for Tornado Cash? How did that work out for Samurai? You know, like we saw Phoenix leave, we saw Waldo Satoshi leave. Like, these things aren't happening for nothing. These people that are in jail, whether you like their, you know, products or the fact that Bitcoiners ignore those enforcement actions because they want Bitcoin only products really, really gets me, because those products and services are regulated one and the same with Bitcoin as digital assets. And so if we want to differentiate Bitcoin from a legal and regulatory perspective, I'm all for that. And I believe without a shadow of a doubt that that will happen one day. But right now, that is not the case. And so all of these regulatory enforcement actions that we see, those are also applicable to Bitcoin-only companies and Bitcoin-only services. So there's a fight mounting, and you know, and people are like, "Oh, screw it!" I'm like, "Okay, if you guys want to literally go down to Washington D.C., I don't want to get your channel banned, but like, if you want to go for the more extreme option, like, sign me up. I'm there." But you're not doing that. You're just like wandering around living your life, right? So we have to like fight it via the established channels, which are laws, regulations, all these rules that they make. So the chasm that exists between like where we are and what will need to happen in order to get to like this world that you speak of is just really massive. We probably need to abolish the BSA, which is the Bank Secrecy Act. You know, it's the reason that we have to do all this AML shit, which is KYC and KYB and all of that. I have actually come to learn in my role at Byte Federal that this is probably more invasive than the Patriot Act, which is a massive statement. But it's really the reason that they can lock down your bank account is because of the BSA. So they can use the Patriot Act to spy on you and decide they want to lock your bank account. But the authority by which they lock your bank account is actually under the BSA regulation. So.
You said more intrusive than the Patriot Act. That seems insane. Right. But how is all this stuff going like unnoticed? Why aren't more people talking about this? Do you think it's just nobody gives a shit or what?
It's a good question. You know, I try to talk about it. Honestly, like when I try to talk about it, people get annoyed because they don't want to deal with the nuance. They're like, oh, Bitcoin doesn't care, or, you know, haha, like I don't have to worry about this because I'm not doxxed. Like, okay, well, when you go to the bank to access your fucking dollars, you're doxxed. You know what I mean? Like, you might not be discussing it publicly on the internet, but when you use your bank card or your credit card or some shit, it has your fucking name on it. So, like, don't tell me this doesn't apply to you. You know, I think it's a hard thing to discuss because it's very complex. It's very complicated. There are no easy solutions. And it's really blackpilling. Like, people are like, oh my God, you're such a doomer. And I like to think of myself as a realist, not a doomer. Like, try to go outside and get sunshine. I'm like, I live on the beach. It's beautiful. Like, my life is great. But it is a hard balance to like be realistic about all of these controls that they have in place, and to also be realistic about what a massive feat it would be to take them down. I mean, abolishing, like repealing the Patriot Act, abolishing the BSA, like these are really serious things. And I think people get overwhelmed by that. Like, oh God, I don't know that we could ever do that. So like, I just don't even want to get involved. But there are smaller actions that can be taken, and we can sort of chip away at some of these things. There are a handful of places where AML policy is being looked at. That's like the biggest piece of the BSA that affects your life and your ability to transact and all of these things. So yeah, and you know, it's never going to happen if we don't talk about it. So I don't know. I know it's not that fun, but I always say like, I never wanted to be an expert in all of this shit. I really didn't. I just wanted to like help rebrand a Bitcoin wallet. Like, oh, cool. You know, let me work with the designer and the developers and we'll put out this amazing product. But here we are, like they started arresting people and, you know, the war on crypto started and all this bullshit. And unfortunately, to be involved in the space, you do have to become an expert on all this shit. And I hope that we can change that. But for now, that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, 100%. All right. I'll leave this question a little bit more open-ended because you've said the word blackpilled a few times here, which I feel like Bitcoin has brought you down these multiple rabbit holes here. So what do you think is the craziest thing that you've gotten blackpilled or something that like, you know, truly opened your eyes in the past, I don't know, couple years here that, you know, if you were to ask yourself, you know, 10 years ago, this and say this exact thing that you're about to tell me that you wouldn't believe a word you're saying.
Okay, I don't think I've actually said this yet out loud. If we don't stop the implementation of the fiat regulation into Bitcoin, Bitcoin could become the CBDC, right? Like if you just take all of the current rules and regulations and laws and existing frameworks, and you put them onto Bitcoin and you require them in all the ways, is that not a CBDC? You know, like, I mean, you can still have non-KYC sats. Again, the Bitcoin protocol doesn't care. And this is the same with cash, right? Like, I can get away from all KYC, from using a license, like all, I can evade all of those regulations by just using cash. But we're limited in our ability to do that, right? It requires extra efforts and extra, you know, planning and all of these things. And they are literally trying to ban the use of cash all over the world. If not being completely banned, it's being like limited, right? Like if you do a transaction over X dollars, $3,000 or $600, it has to be reported. And so there is a path, a non-zero chance that all of this gets rebuilt into the Bitcoin system. And that is something that is actually literally what drives me to scream on the internet every day, is trying to make sure that that does not happen.
Are you looking for a way to earn some free sats? Who isn't? Well, I've got the perfect way for you. It's an app called Yopocky. Besides having the absolute coolest name in the game, they've got an interactive card game called Lotteria. Oh, look at that accent. I'm just hitting it, huh? That can teach you the history of Bitcoin and financial literacy. They've got amazing services and one of the slickest mobile wallets. Download it now using this link and you can get 500 sats on the house on Green Candle, and then you can play Lotteria every single day in order to potentially get some sats. All you got to do is match the cards, and it's an extremely fun and interactive way to learn more about Bitcoin. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Now, why do you think that that could be a potential? Is it just because it's the open source or it's an open ledger? And, you know, if everybody KYCs and everything, like bends the knees to that, you could basically track everything. Like, how do you see, I guess, them implementing that way?
Well, that's part of it, right? So we are signing up for our on-ramps and we're KYCing, and we don't really think about it because we have to do this in every faction of life at this point, right? So we're using our dollars, we're connecting our bank account. Sure, I'll give you my license. I mean, again, I didn't really think about this until I got the job that I have. So that's the first piece of it. But everything else that we're doing, so we're doing that with an on-ramp, right? And then what else might we want to do? Well, we can sell our Bitcoin, which requires an off-ramp. So you have to be KYC'd to off-ramp. There was something that went down. I don't know if you followed, like, with Giacomo had some sats in a wallet and he couldn't get them out. They said you have to KYC if you want to send your sats out. Well, and they talked about, like, his sats being dirty. Well, the reason that that happened is because they had to have been running chain analysis, which identified the transaction and, you know, said, we don't have an identifier. This transaction is not marked to a KYC. And so we want to know who this is. We want to know what's happening. And if you don't want to provide that information, you don't get access to your sats, right? And I think that wasn't even, I don't know if it was even like an on and off ramp. I think it was just a wallet. So we're really dependent on a lot of these services to move our Bitcoin, to interact with the Bitcoin that we have. And all of these services have to comply with the government regulations. So again, it's not a non-zero chance of this happening. And I know there are tools that are built anonymously, and I do think that's really important. But ultimately, I don't think you're going to win that way, right? Because it's always going to be, you know, we talked about, like, people, the smallest amount of people, like, running their own node, opening up their own Lightning channel, all these things. Well, in order to use, like, tools that are fully anonymous, there's all kinds of these additional things we have to do, right? Like, are you running a VPN? Are you behind a firewall? Like, are you hosting all of your services? Like, that's a really, really high technological barrier for entry. And I just don't think that we're going to see hyper-Bitcoinization if the barrier to entry is that high. So what do we need to do? We need to fight this shit, you know? Like, and so I get myself in trouble online because sometimes I don't, like, think as well as I should about, like, I'll just say something. But this is really what I mean when I say, like, everybody needs to speak up, because you're not really, like, fighting if they, like, if they segment, you know, if they say Bitcoin is for criminals and just anonymous internet trolls use it, like, they can get away with a lot of this shit because of that narrative. But if people stand up and say, like, this is who I am and here's what I do in life, right? Like, you have a job, you work for a very legitimate company, and I'm involved in Bitcoin, and I'm not a criminal, I'm not doing criminal things. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to take an army of people that are willing to do that in order to start pushing back in any meaningful way and say, first of all, we're not criminals. Second of all, we're not going to follow your ridiculous regulation. So let's talk about reforming it or repealing it. But we're not going to, like, take them down. I mean, you know, unless you guys want to, like, hack the Fed and, like, truly just take them out. But if you want to talk about, like, doing it openly and honestly and in a way that is, like, lasting, then we do that, you know, openly and honestly. And we say, we're not going to follow these rules, and whatever bullshit red tape you want us to go through to get them repealed, we're going to do that. And if that means I have to go fucking vote, fine, I voted. You know, like, there's obviously, like, hopefully that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And to be honest, like, I've kind of seen it a little bit. I don't know if I'm fully subscribed to the theory that Bitcoin could be a CBDC, but in my opinion, I've been saying this for a little bit. I think the way that the US has been fighting Bitcoin is actually pretty smart. They don't care about, you know, you actually having Bitcoin or anything like that. But what have they been attacking? The KYC platforms, like you brought up, you know, the Phoenix, the wallet of Satoshi. They just want to know what you're doing with it so they can track it and tax you for it. That was kind of my theory, was more on the taxation side of things. And that's why they hired all those IRS agents like a few years ago. But it seems like they haven't really done anything with that. And I don't know if they'll ever be sophisticated enough to kind of catch up. But I don't know. I mean, I do see a path where that could be, you know, a potential there. I'm not sure if the government is ever going to be, I guess, technologically savvy enough to get around everything. I mean, I think there's always going to be a way around it, right? But there's it is an interesting little thought experiment to play here. But we'll end it with some more fun topics, and I want to start
all right
with some word association. I'm going to tell you some names, and I want you to tell me, I guess, 1 to 3 words to describe this said person. And
you're going to get me in so much trouble.
Well, that's the whole point of this, right? We got to
okay
fun with this.
All right. I'm not afraid to be in trouble.
Talked about him a little bit already. We'll start off with Donald Trump.
Hilarious boomer.
Okay. Then we'll go Senator Warren.
The actual criminal.
We'll go with Peter Schiff.
Secretly a Bitcoiner.
All right. Then we'll go Satoshi.
A hero.
All right. And then we will go with Kamala Harris.
A Marxist puppet.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll end it on that one. But you have some hot takes about alpha and beta males. I've been tweeting at you my football videos here like every Sunday, so I hope you're at least getting a little bit of laugh.
I was going to ask you, did you catch any good games recently?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Being an NFL fan is being a beta, according to Michelle over here.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, you guys take some of the shit that I say way too seriously. Like, people get mad, and I'm like, you guys, I'm literally just, like, live streaming bullshit here. Like, calm down. My dad loves football. I have a brother. He loves football. You know, like, it's not that serious, but there was a reason I said that, and I'm not gonna lie, there was actually someone in particular that was posted for, and they know.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's explain it. Then let's dive into it a little bit more then, because
okay,
I'm having fun with it. I hope you feel
me
feel
too. Right. So yeah, it's not that serious. Look, even first of all, like, I think people that are overly, like, people that structure their lives around, like, watching the games and stuff, like I'm not into that. I do think there's a little bit of, like, you're not an alpha male if you're doing that, I'm sorry. But if you, like, have a team and you're rooting for them and you watch the games when you're free and whatever, that it's fine. I personally prefer hockey, but, you know, again, like, you don't take everything I say that seriously. Like, I'm just running my mouth on the internet, guys.
Yeah, but that's the fun part about it, right?
I know.
You sparked a riot, right? I mean, some fans got upset. Me, allegedly me being one of them, right? But
right.
I want to hear your some more of your hot takes of things that you think guys normally do, or a lot of guys do these days that you think is beta. Let's see it. Let's.
Oh gosh.
At least 3.
Oh my gosh. I don't want to say not vote because I know that my younger libertarian self would probably just come into the future and shoot me dead if I say that. But if you want to save the country, like, do something about it. Not hold Bitcoin, obviously.
There we go.
Take some of this nonsense too seriously, right? Like, just the people that were, like, you, I know you're totally kidding. You're like, look, I have a football team. I love them. And you're joking at me all the time. And I think that's awesome, right? But the people that were actually offended, like, okay, so be offended too easily. Like, the people that were actually offended, I'm like, you are literally proving my point. Because if you actually care, if you think that what I'm saying is, like, offensive to you, you have proven my point. If you want to make jokes about it, I will laugh and I will literally never, like, I don't care. I will never think about it again. But I think being too easily offended is probably, like, number one. Let's go back and start with that one.
Okay, that's a fair statement. I think, yeah, I mean, a lot of guys get too offended over the small stuff. And I think it's insane, especially with the age of the internet where things are just, you know, they're meant to be extreme, right? It's supposed to get a rise out of you, but that's why you can't show a rise, right? But
you just do it anyway and let them melt down.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of people are melting down online these days, so especially with the election coming up here. But Michelle, you've been very generous with your time, so why don't you tell people where they can find you and see some more of your hot takes that you're spewing online?
Yeah, absolutely. So all my hot takes and my doom and gloom is all on my ex profile, which is just my name at Michelle Weekly. I only have one account. I won't DM you. It is verified because if you don't pay for a product, you are the product. And yeah, that's really the only place that I am. If you want to know more about Bite Federal, you can follow them as well. And I'm the director of product development there. And yeah, follow me online.
Yeah, you do great stuff. I almost forgot about this. You onboarded a local gas station onto Bitcoin too, not too long ago, right? So,
We did.
yeah, I paid with Bitcoin down
You
there.
came down, right?
Yeah, I came down and I paid with
Yeah.
Bitcoin for some gas, and I think a Slim Jim and
Awesome.
Ben got some Zins. So,
You're
we hit all the bases for our little 1 hour road trip there. So.
alpha for that.
There we go. There we go. I'm doing what I can. I'm just going to go with my chest out tonight. So, all right, Michelle. Well, you've been very generous. Thank you so much. And I'll put
Yeah,
everything that she
absolutely.
mentioned in the show notes. So go ahead and check her out. And yeah, Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.